This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Do you already feel the exam stress peeking in front of the door? Teachers reminding you constantly, your internals are due. You need to study more. School is everything. Your future depends on it. But let's be honest. Does all this pressure, all this stress, actually benefit your ability to learn? We've all been there. Exams inch closer, your to-do list is growing, and suddenly you're in a cycle of late night cramming, high anxiety, and that frustrating feeling that the more you study, the less you actually retain. I must admit, I've been there too. The night before an exam, I'm glued to my desk, forcing every last formula and paragraph into my brain, hoping that something sticks. But is that a successful tactic? Sometimes it works. Kind of. I either make it through the exam, and then it feels like my brain hits delete, or I have brain fog from the start. Have you ever wondered what's going on here? In the following episode, I'm diving deep into the science of learning, and more importantly, the science of stress. What really happens in your brain when you try to study under stress? Why does last-minute cramming feel productive, but often fails in the long run? And how can understanding your brain's neuroplasticity and taking time for yourself can help you learn smarter, not harder? When you go to school, you are expected to learn. But do you know how you learn? Your brain is that big, soft, pinkish-grey, walnut-like wonder of curled matter. It is your body's center, especially for learning, because you learn through something called neuroplasticity. So, what exactly is that? And how does it work? Neuroplasticity is the brain's fundamental ability to change, recognize, and connect information across neural pathways. When you learn things, the brain sends messages from one neuron to another. Picture a neuron like a tree. The roots are called dendrites, which receive signals from other neurons. These signals travel via electricity and chemicals through the trunk, known as the axon, which is a long, slender extension. At the end, the axon branches out into twigs, called axon terminals, which pass the message to the next neuron across a tiny gap. Back in the brain, information that we receive stimulates the presynaptic neuron, which causes the postsynaptic neuron to respond. This transfer of information causes an electric-like reaction, called a synapsis. When you study, the brain eventually forms a connection between these neurons. This builds a new neural pathway, because more neurotransmitter receptors are added, which lowers the threshold that is needed to stimulate the connection. You could imagine that your brain is a wiring of train tracks, and the more you learn, the further you can travel, as new tracks are built between neuron stations. The result of this neuroplasticity, or synaptic plasticity, is that we have learned something new. This can be further positively influenced through the repetition of tasks, as well as motivation, Because when the railway system is better, you will also have it easier to find the knowledge that you are seeking for. But where does all this knowledge go to? And how do we recall it? First, let's visualize the brain and its structures. The brain is made of an outside layer, known as gray matter. Within that outside layer, which forms the walnut-like shape, is white matter. When looking at the whole brain, it is divided into the cerebrum, which forms the major upper area of the brain, with its left and right hemisphere. Below this is the smaller part, called the cerebellum. When it comes to learning and memory, we look at structures and areas in the cerebrum, so the larger top part of the brain. The role of the cerebrum is to interpret your five senses, and it is engaged in functions like thinking, regulating speech, memory, reasoning, judgment, and more. With this part of the brain, there are several smaller areas called lobes. These are divided into the frontal, occipital, parietal, and temporal lobes. First, the frontal lobe has a structure called the prefrontal cortex that is located just behind your forehead. It is important because it controls thinking, learning, and more. Research showed that strong neural activity has been found there. Secondly, the temporal lobe is on the side of your head. Near your ears and retrieves memories, helps to understand language and emotions. This, too, is vital for learning. The temporal lobe also contains what is known as the limbic system. Deep within the limbic system is this amazing seahorse-shaped structure called the hippocampus. It is from here that we retrieve the knowledge we have learned, just like a memory library. Now you know that a majority of learning occurs in the prefrontal cortex and that this knowledge is stored in the hippocampus. But what determines the success of your learning? One particular factor is stress, as it seems to have two effects. Firstly, in the short term, it can improve productivity of study. But in the long term, it seems to reduce efficiency of learning. Why is that the case? Scientists define stress as a state of physiological and psychological tension that prepares you to respond to challenging situations and threats in life. To face these stressful situations, the body has a built-in fight-or-flight response that helps you cope because it improves your focus by controlling the heart rate, breathing, vision, and more. Physiologically, a lot is happening in the brain during stress, which affects our psychology and ability to learn. Firstly, when stress causes the fight or flight response, the sympathetic nervous system is activated, which sends signals to the amygdala. This is another structure that belongs to the limbic system in the temporal lobe. It is a small, almond-shaped cluster that has the role of processing emotions and is the body's alarm system. This then sends a signal to the adrenal glands, located at the top of each kidney, that respond by releasing the hormone adrenaline into the body. From there, all organs enable a survival response. The second component of stress The second component of the stress response occurs in the hypothalamus. This is located in the bottom central part of your brain. This is where the exciting action happens, as the key role of this pea-sized structure is to regulate essential body functions by being the brain's control center and interacting particularly with the pituitary and adrenal glands. This forms the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. It is a complex system which keeps the sympathetic nervous system engaged through several hormones. You could visualize this. Think about the hypothalamus being a person driving a car and having control over the gas pedal and brake, which simulates the body's physiological activities. If it continues to recognize danger, then the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis releases the stress hormone cortisol, which enables the body to continue to stay on high alert. However, as soon as the threat passes, the parasympathetic nervous system, partially controlled by the hypothalamus, hits the brake and dampens the stress responses. When it comes to learning, stress can have positive and negative effects. Let's look at the positive effects. When stress is immediate and lasts for a short time, for example, when stressing about finishing homework for the next day, then it is called short-term or acute stress. This can be different for everyone, but generally speaking, this kind of stress is beneficial stress, which is sometimes called eustress. Research has shown that this short-term response, a mechanism from Mother Nature, enhances performance. As described previously, when the hormones adrenaline and cortisol are released in the body, then it enables you to focus more and to feel motivated, which improves your ability to study. However, sadly, this positive effect of stress is no long-term solution. In contrast, negative effects arise when stress lasts for a long time. For example, when stressing about practice exams and then about the end-of-year exams, many tend to develop a form of long-term or chronic stress. When stress becomes frequent, the body releases adrenaline and cortisol often, which can be very exhausting physiologically and psychologically. The negative consequences of this is that it eventually impairs learning and memory, because stress causes an imbalance of the neural circuit. The overused stress response dysregulates the body, which affects cognition, decision-making, anxiety, and mood. As you can imagine, this sounds like a lot of stress. No wonder everyone is in a mood during exams when that is going on inside the brain. Also, chronic stress has a big effect on motivation, which is why eventually, even when an exam or deadline is coming, you feel unmotivated to even start learning. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that is the body's feel-good hormone that is important for our brain's reward system and motivation. It usually works in combination with serotonin, which is another hormone and neurotransmitter that regulates moods, your learning ability, memory, and more. These two are your brain's favorite feel-good duo. But when cortisol acts with these two chemicals, it depletes both of them over time. You can imagine cortisol feels like a third wheel friend following a couple, trying to get attention. If serotonin is decreasing, women tend to become anxious, whilst men tend to start developing impulse control issues. When you look at your friends and family, you might notice these differences between women's and men's response to chronic stress. But when dopamine is also low, motivation changes, and your life feeling unenthusiastic, unmotivated, and lethargic, which declines productivity, particularly when trying to study. As we have seen, the long-term stress affects your memory, so the hippocampus region of your brain. Your short-term memory processes and uses information that you will either forget or later store in your long-term memory. During chronic stress, cortisol tends to be the dominant hormone that stays in our body. This has a strong effect on the hippocampus because it changes its structure. Therefore, during stressful times, it can be hard to uptake new material into the long-term memory, which is needed to recall information in an exam, because the ability to move information from the short-term memory to the long-term memory is impaired. This leads to the conclusion that stress can have positive impacts in the short term regarding productivity, but which are outweighed by the long-term negative consequences of chronic stress. When you stress over exams for a long time, you are less likely to be productive and to actually transfer new knowledge into your long-term memory to retrieve it during an exam. Instead, if you are negatively stressed, you are likely to experience brain fog, which makes learning a lot worse and frustrating. That is why it is important to try to not stress and start early in your homework and exam preparation instead of cramming, because your body, especially your brain, will thank you if it does not have to sort out this chaos caused by cortisol. Now, how can this be applied to our day-to-day life? When it comes to stress, the truth is you cannot eliminate it as a factor from your life. Sometimes life is stressful and challenging. Exams, deadlines, pressure. It can be tough, but your experiences shape who you are today, who you will be tomorrow, and will make you stronger. Because on the flip side, stress doesn't have to break you. It can build you. That is what resilience is all about. It's not about avoiding the tough stuff, but learning how to move through it, smarter and stronger. In other words, you could say that resilience is the essence of how you can handle your short-term and long-term stress by adapting and working through challenges that you are facing. Personally, exams have been a very stressful time for me during the past few years. Either I'd study endlessly and still feel like I wasn't doing enough, or worse, I'd cram the night before an exam and hope it all magically stuck. But what changed everything for me was realizing that real learning doesn't happen under panic. It happens in peace. Cramming in the short term is not the solution for learning in the long term. Instead, by starting early and taking those small steps over a longer period, allows the brain to establish new connections. That's when I noticed that the brain fog during tests was lifting. This has helped me build resilience during the exam phase, because when I study consistently over time, I can trust that my knowledge has settled into my long-term memory. and trust myself to perform well. I want to say that sometimes really trying to not stress is the key element to building resilience and performing well. Because in the end, resilience isn't just bouncing back, but growing forward. Therefore, if you are struggling or feeling stressed, make a change to your life that gets you on your path of your dreams. A good starting point is your daily routine. Try to get enough sleep. Make a weekly schedule. Eat healthy. Go for a sunny walk. Reduce your screen time. And spend quality time with people who bring joy to your life. Life can be challenging, but you will build resilience by managing your stress. When I stepped outside of my shell and managed my stress levels, I recognized that the world was mine to live in. And I tell you, reducing that cortisol and promoting our favorite happy hormone duo of dopamine and serotonin really makes a difference to your learning and will help you smash out those end-of-year exams. Good luck for those. And thank you for listening.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.